Hey everybody, we're going to get to the WWE podcast and reviewing Monday Night Raw with some very interesting things to talk about, including Samoa Joe's physicality at the end of the show. We're going to get to that, the progress of Seth Rollins and AOP, the fact that Bobby Lashley and Lana are going to be getting married next week on Raw, and where in the hell was Monday Night Raw hosted this week? Well, who knows, because WWE didn't let you know. So I'm going to get to all of that and, of course, tons more. But first, a word from the sponsor of the show, and then we're going to get right into the Raw review. Stay right here. Hey, sports fans. Do you want to listen to an all-sports podcast? Give a listen to my friends on the Poppin' Suns Sports Show. They provide you with quality sports-related content from NBA, NFL, MLB, MMA, and boxing, as well as local high school sports in their area. Pops and his boys Lance, Eric, and Ross will provide you with unfiltered fun and listening with their weekly Who You Benching segment, where they pick out a person for that week in sports who is essentially the bum of the week. Find them on Twitter at Poppin' Suns, on Facebook at Pop and Suns Sports. That's on Facebook at Pop and Suns Sports, or you can find them on iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and many other podcast providers. Again, go check out the Pop and Suns Sports Show. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Christmas Eve, December 24th, 2019. Thank you guys for joining me. Yes, I am recording this on Christmas Eve. This is not a back issue of the show. This is as live as it gets, although you're listening to this on delay. It's being recorded live. And I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, not Happy Holidays, because you know what? F Happy Holidays, right? I mean, I don't need to be PC about this. If you don't celebrate Christmas, then this means nothing to you. I don't think I offend anybody by saying Merry Christmas. So there, how about that for a PC beginning of the show? That's the kind of mood I'm in, and it's Christmas, and I get it, but man, I'm fired up about this show from last night, and we're going to get to that, of course. And as I alluded to at the very beginning of the show, boy, some really good stuff and some very head-scratching stuff. Just simple stuff like, hey, where the hell was Monday Night Raw this week? Was it recorded in outer space or somewhere in the WWE universe? Apparently, WWE has its own universe. You know, there's the original universe, and then WWE created their own, so there are a multiverse, I guess. That is an actual proven theory now, that there are more than one universes, or universe I don't know, whatever the plural is for that. But hey, we don't know where the hell it was recorded, and maybe I'm overthinking this, but I never saw a banner. I understand it was pre-recorded, but I never saw a banner. I never saw anything. I never saw them mention anything of where they were. I'm trying to find it, and I just did a quick search. I could not find where the hell Monday Night Raw emanated from this week. And maybe, again, it could be a very simple answer, and it could be a very simple way to find out. I didn't go into depth about it. I just feel like I shouldn't. WWE should not have to make me search for where the hell they emanated from this week. And yeah, it may be a small thing, but the more that we see them over-exaggerate and over-emphasize whenever they're in a big market and then hide when they're in a market that's not an NFL town is just straight embarrassing. But anyway, I actually enjoyed the show overall, and I've got some great, great things to discuss, stuff that's not going to be all negative. For those of you that think I'm a negative Nancy, I've got some great stuff to talk about, stuff that I'm excited about, to be honest with you, along with rumors about Edge returning. Yeah, it's ironic that I did an Edge specific, well, not specific to Edge, but a Royal Rumble favorite nostalgia show last week, and one of the moments was Edge returning to the Royal Rumble and winning it, and now we have rumors of that circulating again almost 10 years later, so certainly ironic, and I don't know if I have like some kind of superpower, or it's just straight up coincidence. I'd like to believe it's superpowers and not a coincidence, so I'm going to go with that. And it's just circulating around right now. And, you know, this is the time of year when rumors start to run amok. And we'll see if that comes to fruition. So we'll get into that and what that could mean and all that kind of stuff. With the Raw review. So I'll mix it in as my brain decides to allow me to. I don't like to go in a specific order. So as far as the things that pop into my head, I just talk about. How about that? All right. Well, guys, thank you again for joining me on this Christmas Eve. I hope that y'all are enjoying it. And by this time, you are probably either just enjoying presents with your family, or maybe it's afterwards, or maybe it's a lot afterwards, and you're just trying to decompress from the holiday season. I know I am. And let me just say this, as far as the holidays go. Oh, good God. And yes, this will be my final non-wrestling comment, and I promise I will get into all the WWE stuff. I am really starting to loathe the holidays. Loathe them. And it's not because I'm anti-Christian, or I don't know the true meaning of Christmas. Ah, you need to step away from the commercialism. Hey, you know what the real meaning... Yeah, I know what the real meaning of the holiday is. I get it, okay? I understand it. And we can say that until we're blue in the face. And we can, you know, maybe have moments that we're not stressed out about the holidays. But the fact of the matter is, the reality is, if you live on this earth, in reality, in the normal, original universe, not the WWE one, because apparently they created their own, this is a universe that you can't escape the stress of the holidays. And particularly when you have kids, right? Because when you have kids, it maximizes and exponentially expands the stress, the money, and everything else that goes with the holidays. And it can be a fun time, no doubt. The holidays are about kids. I get it. The holidays are about the kids. And I totally understand that, and I agree with you. But the fact of the matter is, being a parent during the holidays, as I am this year, is a completely different view than it was in my other 33 years of existing on this earth. And what I mean by that is, yes, money, okay, don't care, but whatever. Like, you know, buy the kids whatever for Christmas, make them have a good Christmas. Fine. I agree with that. It's the traveling. It's the traveling, because you got to get your crap, and you got to pack it up, and you got to remember this and that. And then it gets spread out throughout whoever you're staying at, their house. And then you got to, like, wrap that all up. Other kids are running around. You got to make sure you don't lose your crap at that person's house. You got to find a place to sleep. Then they don't sleep because it's in a different place. And you have everyone screaming, and you try to unwrap presents and find your gifts and rewrap them and repack your crap to come back in the car to unpack. It's unbelievable. And maybe some of you parents out there are saying, Matt, welcome to the real world. And you know what? If that's my introduction to the real world, well, I'm here, and I guess I'm here to stay, because as a parent, that doesn't go away. I just, the whole process of it, regardless of what you may think about the meaning of the holiday, and I have definite more meaning to the holiday than just commercialism. It's all about presents and buying crap. Okay, we're not going to get into religion, but I get it. I just am very, very aware of the pressures of the holiday and making sure everyone gets this and that. You got to buy this and that for that person and this and that. And just, oh, there goes your bank account starts getting depleted, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, it's a time that I'm starting to loathe with everything in me. And it's, I don't want to, but that's reality. It is a time that I would love to just hit fast forward on. And there are some great moments, let's be honest, with kids. It's fun seeing their faces and they're happy and all that's wonderful. But, you know, the other 80%, 85% of your time, yeah. Before I start going explicit on Christmas, which I'd rather not, I just want to move on here. So, anyway, if you guys want to head on over to Patreon and you want to get an ad-free experience, you're like, hey, get rid of those ads. Go over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and get all these ad-free experiences for every single show that I've done under this umbrella of the WWE podcast. And it's a cool deal. And I would like to hear from you guys what you'd like on Patreon. If you're thinking about it and you visited the site and you're like, I don't know, I don't want to spend any money, it's ad-free, but I can get it for free. What would you want to see on Patreon? Is it video? Is it Q&A? Is it more blogs? Is it all of the above? Is it more audio? Maybe back, you know, I guess maybe after the show commentary. What is it that you guys would like to see on Patreon for you to be like, hey, maybe it is worth it, right? We'll see. There's some expansions that I'm thinking of doing, potentially like commentary after the show or a specific topic I only talk about for that show or for that feed. I'm not sure yet, but I just want to, you know, those of you that are visiting, maybe give you a little bit more of a reason to check it out, right? All right, well, that's my spiel, and what I'd like to do right now is just talk about the show Monday Night Raw, right? That's why you're here. That's why you clicked on the show. That's why you subscribe, is to talk about Monday Night Raw and hear commentary and hear my thoughts and others' thoughts on that show. Look, I think Monday Night Raw, for a Christmas show, was very good. Was it the best Monday Night Raw I've ever seen? I mean, LOL, right? No, of course not. But it was a show that progressed storylines on a show that typically doesn't. Holiday season shows are usually just a maintenance show. It's a kind of, you know, by the numbers, hold steady, hold the ship steady show. Especially with so much time between now and the Rumble, it wouldn't have been unexpected for WWE to just, you know, hold steady and not really progress a lot. They did. And I'm happy about that. And they progressed in a huge way on Monday night. And yes, they certainly had their consistently awful things that they do on Monday night. Like, and again, this is just a cyclical, seasonal sin that WWE has, is doing Christmas-themed promos or referring to, you know, basically ass-whippings as presents. I don't need that analogy every year. It's the most unoriginal, eye-rolling analogy that's used every single damn year. And even the Vic Joseph, you know, Mr. Excitement there, is the first one to come on Raw and say, and the superstars have gifts to give each other, meaning like ass whippings, right? Like, okay, we get it. Hee hee, ha ha. I mean, come on, let's grow up. All right, I don't need that. And you knew somebody was going to go through the gifts on stage, right? Ended up being Rey Mysterio at the end. So here's why I want to start on a positive note with the review of Raw. Outside of Vic Joseph's reference of ass whippings as presents, okay, is Samoa Joe. That has to be the first thing I talk about here. Has to be. Because having Samoa Joe get it physically involved, A, means that he is clearly, he is cleared for action. No doubt. He has been cleared for in-ring return. And that is damn exciting. The crowd got behind him. Seeing AOP up there taking it to Samoa Joe, I think, was a hell of a visual. Samoa Joe has improved on commentary. I think it fits him well. He could be an easy transition post in-ring career to the announce desk. I think that is a place that he could go. Taz has done it extremely successfully, and Taz is one of my favorites that has transitioned from the ring to commentary. Matt Stryker's another, although not nearly the level of talent, and wasn't my favorite either, and will forever stain the final match of HBK ever with his voice. It just should have been Jim Ross, hands down, at WrestleMania 26. But there have been others that have tried and done well. As look at JBL. JBL, I think, did a great job, as much as I think he is a not the best of human beings in terms of how he treats other people, because he thinks he's the alpha male in the locker room. Not a fan of that, and again, it's been all documented. This isn't just conjecture. There are many testimonies of that he is just this alpha male that likes to go around and do the hazing and pretend that he's the big guy on the block, right? And so, again, but JBL on commentary, very good. I thought JBL was great on commentary at times. So there's been examples, and I think Samoa Joe post-career, in-ring career, could transition nicely into the commentary booth. But that also means that he's going to be removed from Monday Night Raw, most likely, in terms of the commentary booth. Most likely that means that he's not going to be on Raw next week in a commentary position, and that he's now officially transitioned back into the ring. And that's exciting on a lot of different levels. The fans haven't seen him in the ring in months and months, and they've gotten to hear his voice. And as I said, I wasn't a huge fan of him at first. It's not an easy transition. As good of a talker as Joe is, it's not an easy transition. We all think we could do better, right? I'm sitting here in my own home being very critical of something that sounds so easy, and I know it's not easy. And even though he cuts a great promo, doesn't mean it's going to translate nicely into the commentary booth that has a headset on of Vince McMahon screaming in your ear about what to say and when to say it and how to say it so we all sound the same, which is what's happening on Raw, considering Vic Joseph sounds exactly like Michael Cole in terms of words, right? In terms of words, everything sounds the same. Yes, Vic Joseph has his own voice, right? I know that. I'm talking about how everything is talked about and said and matches are talked about. Everything sounds the same. So for Samoa Joe to go into that environment, much different than when you're on a promo, because there's no headset on. You have the mic. You are live. You are the one calling the shots, within reason, of course. So I think Samoa Joe has done a nice job of and improving week after week. So on one front, I'm a little bit sad that he'll be transitioning away from the commentary booth in which he was improving week to week and adding a lot of value, particularly with the AOP segments he's talked about, which now obviously makes a lot of sense. But he had talked about them a couple of weeks in a row now, about how they are just bad men. And he talked seriously about them. I loved his commentary on AOP when Vic Joseph would just kind of like stare at him as, you know, he talks about how serious they are and what kind of men they are. I liked that. Obviously, this was leading to AOP physically taking down Joe. And I think it was done brilliantly. I loved how AOP did it. I loved how it was directed by Seth, who is the self-appointed dictator or leader of Monday Night Raw. And having Samoa Joe sit there but not move as they were going to try to put Rey Mysterio through the announce table. And Seth saying, Joe, you know, this isn't about you. You know, you have your job. This is mine. We're all good. We're all good. Then he walks away, turns his back to Joe, and says to the AOP, finish him. How skeezy and how just unlikable is Seth right now? This suits him. This suits him so well. It is something that is, it's making me care about what Seth Rollins is doing for the first time. And I can't even tell you how long it's been since I've cared about the Seth Rollins character more than I do now. And AOP is fitting him like a glove. Yeah, it's only been a couple of weeks. I get it. But it is a nice flow so far. And having Samoa Joe be the next target, they are setting the story up here, I think, to, I don't think, I know, where AOP and Seth are starting to grow their enemy list longer and longer. And it's only a matter of time before the numbers game evens up on them. And that's what I'm looking for. And now they have Kevin Owens, they have Rey Mysterio, and now Samoa Joe. Could I see a 3-on-3 match? Absolutely. But next week, when one of them goes after, I don't know, maybe Seth Rollins and AOP go back after Rey Mysterio, and then Kevin comes out, gets beat down, and then Samoa Joe comes out, clears the ring, and three stand in the ring and clear out AOP and Seth, and then it's a, you know, 3-on-3 six-man tag match. I mean, could I see that? Yeah. And the odds are even now. But I think, honestly, I think Kevin Owens could probably be used in a better capacity at the Rumble if that's what it's leading to, a 3-on-3 match. Or maybe it's leading to Rollins and Samoa Joe. I don't know. But I think with the Royal Rumble format, it would suit Kevin Owens better to be involved in the Rumble match itself than just a grudge match. with the AOP and Seth, especially considering that no championships are on the line. I would like Seth to eventually gain some gold, because I think that could be a really something to behold, as Seth gains a championship, even if it's with the United States Championship. I thought he could have had a really good chance Monday night to beat Rey Mysterio, and he didn't. And I thought that he should, because that would, I think, further the heat on Seth by using the heavies of AOP to maintain his championship. That's just an age-old, tried-and-true formula. And I was anticipating that to happen, and I'm fine with it, but I thought it was an opportunity, and one that could still happen. Maybe they're just waiting to pull the trigger. I also like that WWE is building heat for this team. They're not blowing off the heat so damn quick to make sure that the crowd goes home happy, and we make sure everyone has a smile on their face, because, my God, we're like Ronald McDonald. We make sure everybody is like, gosh darn it, good golly, what a great company this is. They make me and my kids smile, as I vomited in my mouth just then. That is not the company I need. This is the company I need, because I am legitimately, and this is great, legitimately starting to dislike Seth and the AOP, and that's a damn compliment, and not in a way that's going to make me cheer them at a house show or a live event. This, my friends, is on the path to true heat. And it's not the go-away heat, although that's still heat, you could argue. That's a whole other show on go-away heat versus true heat, right? But it's the heat I have not felt for anybody in a long time. Baron Corbin doesn't really make me feel this way. I like to see him get beat up, but he gets beat up so often and his heat doesn't get a chance to build that it's not that exciting when somebody finally whoops his ass. With Seth Rollins and the AOP, it's been weeks now. AOP has yet to get their asses kicked since their re-debut of this, these like stone-faced killers. Again, I liken them to Breaking Bad, the cousins from Breaking Bad. If you haven't seen that, good God, what are you doing? I mean, if you haven't seen Breaking Bad, number one, like, what, where have you been, right? But number two, go back and watch the cousins from Breaking Bad, from Tuco. Tuco's cousins. Does that ring a bell? They were in, like, silver suits. They went around, they almost killed Hank, okay? Those guys, spoiler alert, even though it's, like, 6 years later, that is what they are. And I don't know if that's the template they use to create this version of AOP, but whatever this version is, I love it. I'm loving it. So I'm glad that they're building the heat. You don't hear people cheering for them. And I told you on this show that as much as CM Punk and Paige said on WWE backstage that, oh, well, now the irony is that now that, you know, they turned Seth as a bad guy and now he's going to get cheered. That's the irony of this. Both Paige and Punk said this, that he's going to be cheered now. That's the irony. No, he's not. Do you hear any cheers? I don't. Because Seth is damn good at a heel role. He belongs as a heel. I don't need Seth as a babyface. I'm not kidding you, for the next 2 years, maybe more. Maybe never turn him back face again. I mean, could you? Barring an injury, because anytime a big hot heel leaves with an injury and comes back, the fans forget how much they hate them and remember how much they respect them and miss them on the show because they love to hate them. And it all just turns back into positive energy. That's just the way it goes. Look at Triple H in 2002. Left as the hottest heel in the company, came back as the biggest babyface in the company. So, barring that kind of injury, I think Seth has the long-ass heel run in front of him. I really think that. And I think that he has a long and prosperous career in front of him as a heel. And he also has to work less as a heel that has heavies for him. That's not just in the storyline, that's in real life. If you have somebody that can take the hits for you, even in the storyline, that translates into a longer career because you're not taking those bumps. You're not taking those hits. You're having guys do the physical part for you. And again, that's part of the story, but it's also part of the real life character and the real life human being, the body. The physical, actual body of Seth Rollins doesn't have to take those hits. But I'm looking really forward to this storyline, how it's progressing. To me, I look forward to this every week now. It's interesting. I like the way they're progressing. I like the chemistry. I think all three men are work well together. The way that they are just gelling and the chemistry they have is something to behold. And I'm on board. I'm on board completely. And I think Kevin Owens is also also doing well. I think that that is the other piece of this. And now we have Rey Mysterio and Samoa Joe all in the babyface camp, all looking to avenge their beatdowns, and now it's 3-on-3. So how do these three come together? I think we will see evidence of that next Monday night on Monday Night Raw on December 30th. So the final Raw of 2019. And I'm sure we will get, as this week got the Christmas presents equal ass-whooping, we will get the analogy next week of what everyone's New Year's resolution is to, whatever the generic resolution is, but I guarantee you that there will be New Year's resolution promos. It's just the way it is, and you'll hear it. And it's just it's a little overdone because I feel like maybe we don't have to put this in every promo. I mean, the announcers can say it's the final year, the final Raw of 2019, but I don't need to hear it in promos, right? I just don't. Anyway, all right, guys, I'm going to take a quick break for the sponsors of the show, and then we're going to get back to the detail, the piece-by-piece, play-by-play of Monday Night Raw that aired last night on December 23rd, so stay right here. Hey, sports fans, do you want to listen to an all-sports podcast? Give a listen to my friends on the Poppin' Suns Sports Show. They provide you with quality sports-related content from NBA, NFL, MLB, MMA, and boxing, as well as local high school sports in their area. Pops and his boys Lance, Eric, and Ross will provide you with unfiltered fun and listening with their weekly Who Ya Benching segment, where they pick out a person for that week in sports who is essentially the bum of the week. Find them on Twitter at Poppin' Suns, on Facebook at Pop and Suns Sports. That's on Facebook at Pop and Suns Sports. Or you can find them on iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and many other podcast providers. Again, go check out the Pop and Suns Sports Show. You'll be glad you did. Hey, so if you're a fan of the heavier stuff, rock music, heavy metal, but you want a little comedy in your podcast, then check out Slowly We Rock. It's metal's favorite new podcast. It's three guys from the UK taking an irreverent look at the world of heavy music, mixed with some very funny tangents for good measure. They're asking the big questions, such as, if Bon Jovi were to have a reality TV show, what would it be? Can you say something nice about Metallica's Saint Anger? And who the hell let Kiss write a fantasy adventure concept album? There are also regular bad album reviews, loads of gig chat, and news from the music world that might not have made the headlines. Slowly We Rock is dumb, it's fun, and promises to be a real roller coaster. These guys are all too willing to jump down the rabbit hole if it makes them laugh enough. You can join Jim, Dan, and Lewis every 2 weeks wherever podcasts are found. That's Spotify, Apple, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Be sure to check out Slowly We Rock, the funniest and dumbest podcast in rock and metal. All right, everybody, welcome back. And let's get into the kickoff of the show here. Owens opens up the show, claims he has a lot on his mind about a lot of people. But before he can continue, Mojo Rawley, yes, I don't know if I've ever said that name on this show either, made his way out, says that the first thing better be an explanation for the nonsense is with the steel pipe that happened last week. KO says he wasn't even going to talk about that, but Mojo says Owens needs a reality check. And that Owens isn't a tough guy, but everyone is with a steel pipe in their hands, which is why tonight will be a no disqualifications match. KO cuts him off, says they need to just get on with it. So right away, Owens and Mojo get it on with their no DQ match, and Kevin Owens ends up winning pretty soundly after hitting him with a stunner. And then the pop-up powerbomb through the table. The one bump that was interesting was Kevin Owens taking a bump on the four chairs that were set up. And I didn't think he was going to take that. Brutal, brutal hit. And I loved it. Number one, I love this match because And again, I didn't love it in the fact that I thought it was a five-star match, okay? I loved it in the fact that they are trying to build another star. That was the objective of this match. The objective of this match, I believe, was really to try to establish Mojo Rawley here. And yes, Mojo Rawley is not going to win this match. But I think it was a case of seeing if the crowd reacts to him in any kind of way that could be built upon. And I think that Mojo Rawley is a guy that is underutilized, has been kind of a running joke. We all remember him with Zack Ryder, right? We remember that team. And then he kind of turned heel. He aligned himself with, who's the tight end of New England? The tight end of the New England Patriots. And he came in at WrestleMania, and that was the connection. That was the connection with Mojo Rawley. He has an NFL buddy, and he comes out and, look at that. He's got, NFL connections. He can do football moves in the ring. Never really quite found it, and then gets involved with Kevin Owens. And I think he kind of felt like he belonged a bit. He has a good presence on the mic. When he talks, I listen. I enjoyed what Rollins or Mojo had to say. And yes, this match was also about AOP and Kevin Owens. But I believe that a big focus here was on Rawley. Because when's the last time Mojo Rawley got not just a premium spot in the show, but a relevant spot in the show? If he's not just backstage hanging out or being involved in a stupid food fight or really being an extra on his own show, this is the first time that I can remember that Mojo Rawley's gotten any kind of real prominent positioning on the show. So I enjoyed that, and I'd like to see more from Mojo. God knows WWE needs depth on their roster, and I am all for Mojo Rawley being a heel, right? Yes, we have Seth Rollins newly turned, but you got to have more depth than that, right? Randy Orton is now babyface. AJ's heel, yes. So AJ's probably number two in AOP, the OC. A lot of vowel named groups, right? But anyway, so KO after the match, see Seth Rollins come to the ring and give a handshake to Owens. Again, Owens called him out as he said he was in a fighting mood. And Rollins extends an olive branch to Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens hits a super kick on Rollins. AOP quickly get in the ring and lay Owens out. And then Rollins hits a stomp again to Owens to end the segment. So, good segment here. It really just continued to further cement the fact that Rollins is a chicken. Yeah. He is, and he's starting to show that as he doesn't do the dirty work and has his boys do it and then comes in to finish people off with the stomp. I like it. He's always trying to pretend that he's the victim here and he's the one doing what has to be done and he's the leader. It's all arrogance. It's all disillusionment. It's great qualities to have in a dictator who is self-appointed. And that's what Seth Rollins is. He is a self-appointed dictator that believes he has the locker room behind him when no one's behind him. And just proclaims to be always doing the right thing for the right reasons. And I'm the victim here. Good stuff. Great psychology. Nobody's cheering this. It's good. Kevin Owens is inherently likable. Despite Vince McMahon's probably extreme irritation that Kevin Owens looks the way he does with his beer gut and all that, the people get behind Owens, and rightfully so. And I think this furthers also Kevin Owens. And as we'll see later in the night, Rey Mysterio and, of course, Samoa Joe. Moving down the line here, let's see the next segment. We had an R-Truth 24/7 championship segment. This is where R-Truth was strolling around New York City and leads him to be attacked from behind. We have a new champion, Akira Tozawa. So as I'm reading this, Apparently they're in New York City. So what are they, still in the Barclays Center? Is that what this was? It was never mentioned, if that's the case, right? Okay. So Akira Tozawa is the 24/7 champion. Does anybody really care about the 24/7 championship anymore? It's sad, but it's... All right, moving on. We got Bobby Lashley versus Cedric Alexander. Bobby Lashley had his power here, obviously, on display. Cedric Alexander, though, I think had a great showing, reminding you why he was considered at one point to be getting a strong push from Vince McMahon, who then decided, no, I don't want to. He was also the janitor at one point in a storyline. It was kind of weird, I think, with Shane McMahon, just bizarre. But Bobby Lashley ends up getting a really, well, being the victim of a lot of fast hitting, quick offense from Cedric Alexander, sending him to the outside. And then Lana takes the microphone and gets in the ring, asking Alexander who he thinks he is. And that next week is the most important day of Bobby's life. He can't be all bruised up next week because he and Lana are being married on Monday Night Raw. Now, I'm going to take issue with this. Let me get this straight. We are in a competitive, at least a perceived, sports simulation of a competitive environment. And you have Lana, who has the power to just take the microphone, pause the match, where the referee doesn't even count the count out Bobby Lashley. He could have counted to 30. He just said, oh, well, what's Lana got to say? Screw my job. I'm not going to count Bobby Lashley out. Let's get this, you know, segment here in, because all the rules go out the window. And furthermore, it also cements Cedric Alexander as a fool. You have Bobby Lashley, a beast of a man, down. You're an extreme underdog in this match, and you're concerned about what Lana has to say when this man is being afforded now time to recover. And the referee is also completely mesmerized by Lana, who has these magical powers to just allow the referee to be distracted so much that he can't remember to count 10. With Bobby Lashley on the outside of the ring. This wasn't a no disqualification, no DQ, no count out match. This was just a regular straight up singles match. And yet Bobby Lashley was just afforded the ability and the luxury of being able to recover for as long as he wanted. As long as Lana had the microphone, everything just came to a pause. It's garbage. It's seriously like, well, it's a storyline. You're thinking too much. No, I'm not thinking too much. Yeah, I'm not thinking too much. In a place that you want to have emotional investment. You know what creates cash? When you actually care about what's going on. If you don't give a damn about what's going on, you're not going to invest in it, because guess what? You don't care. And you know what makes you care? Emotions. Because we're all human. And if I don't care what's going on, I'm not going to spend money on it. So this is one of those things that just continues to just slowly chip away at the goodwill and the suspense of disbelief that is WWE. In 2019. So, anyway, after Lana was done with what she had to say, because it was just a pause for everything moment, Cedric follows up and ends up obviously losing the damn match because Lashley hits a spear on Cedric Alexander, and Lashley wins. And we all mercifully move on from this just complete lack of attention to detail. I mean, that's really it. Okay, let's see. We had a Zack Ryder versus Drew McIntyre match. I don't really know what to say. McIntyre is just kind of, again, spinning his wheels. He leveled Zack Ryder with a clothesline. And then, I don't know what to make of this. Like, Drew McIntyre is a guy that every time I see him, I say, how the hell does he have a championship? How is he still being just jerked around in WWE creative? And yet every week I go, well, I don't know. And maybe they're testing Drew McIntyre to see how he reacts when he's not being prominently positioned in a way that most feel he should be, or maybe he himself even feels like he should be. Maybe he's in the doghouse and we don't know it. There must be something else going on. I just am just so puzzled by why and how they're not positioning Drew McIntyre to be more. And maybe it'll come, but I've said that for how long now? I've said that for how long? He has so much there. So much there. Okay. Moving down the line here into the next page as I click through my, well, it's not my write-up. It's somebody else's write-up, but hey, why write it up when it's already written? We have a interesting segment here with Becky Lynch challenging Asuka, and she came out and said that she has had a lot of things in her mind lately, but the one thing she's learned is that she does better when she takes things in her own hands, and she's out here to do that, and she said she's become the face of the company. Lynch claims that the company is trying to save her, but she doesn't give a damn what the company wants. Fine, you're anti-authority. Whatever. It works. I'm fine. Not complaining. It's just interesting to say that when you're also on their show being produced to... Well, anyway. Thinking too much. Right, Matt? Thinking too much. Lynch claims that the man versus Asuka needs to happen, and she's not taking no for an answer. Lynch puts over Asuka, stating she's the one woman to beat her fair and square, and she's coming around to collect one last debt. I don't know if I'm a fan of this whole collecting her debt thing. I don't know. It's weird. But Asuka comes out and reminds Becky that she and Kairi Sane are the champions. And then, this is all broken English and 95% Japanese. She says, Asuka, two belts. Lynch says that if putting her title on the line is what it takes, then she'll do that. As the man fires back with some Japanese of her own. So she responded back to Kairi and Asuka in Japanese. This is an assumption and a pretty strong one that this is going to happen, right? Asuka and Becky Lynch will happen, presumably at the Royal Rumble for the Raw Women's Championship. And interesting dynamic there. Could Asuka actually win? We'll get there. We'll get there, I'm sure. This is not a prediction show, but I would not rule it completely out to put the Raw Women's Championship on Asuka. I wouldn't bet a lot on it, but there's a chance as we get... every time that Becky defends it, it's a time closer to her actually losing it. And I think that that time is closing in. I think it's closing in. But she is so close to WrestleMania at this point. I don't know that if WWE wants to actually do it, now's the time to do it. Because for them to make it 8-9 months past her win, why would you do the loss when you could just go 3 more months and have her claim that she's held this for a year? I think that's the better choice, because that rarely happens in today's hot potato belt environment. All right, then we had Dion Russman versus Aleister Black. And by the way, Asuka, learn some damn English, please. And Asuka, as great of a performer as she is, all the charisma and gimmicky cartoon stuff she does, her promos, even though I don't know what she's saying in Japanese, I don't know if I need to know that her body language is cartoon, right? I feel like I'm watching Saturday morning cartoons, like I'm watching some Japanese cartoon that's like over animated. That's what I feel like she's getting her inspiration from, are like the Saturday morning cartoons in Japan. You know what I'm talking about, those Japanese cartoons. That's what I feel like she's getting it from. It's eye rolling. I don't like her body language and how she screams things and her inflection of what she says. And how she says it, there's awkward pauses when there shouldn't be pauses, and there's talking when there shouldn't be talking. She's just a weird cat when it comes to promos. Just weird. Because I feel like she's overproducing herself. I don't need her to come out and act all wonky and, oh, the more flamboyant I am, the more I'll be, the more I'll come off on camera, and the more charisma I'll show. Someone gave her bad advice. Like, whoever gave her this advice for promos needs to be fired. I mean, it's just the way it is. All right, so Dion Russman versus Aleister Black. Guess who wins? Yeah, Mr. Aleister Black, Mr. Squash Match himself, continues to squash His opponents, as expected, fine with this. Again, at some point they're going to have to move him up a level, and maybe they will, but for now he resides in the squash match level, and that's okay. That's okay. It really is. Buddy Murphy versus Joyce? I think I said that right. Maybe not. Buddy Murphy ends up mocking Black by picking up his opponent with his foot as he hits Murphy's Law to win. So Buddy Murphy wins. He stares down Black, who then heads down to the ring and offers to shake hands with Murphy, but he decides to slap the hand the other way. He turns back around and walks in straight into a black mass. So, I like this, because this tells me we're getting Buddy Murphy and we're getting Aleister Black again. And we know what they did at TLC. It was the match of the damn night. So I'm looking forward to this. Okay. Tony Nese versus Ricochet. I mean, again, not a lot on the line here. Just put two guys in the ring. They know they can go together and Ricochet wins. That's pretty much what it was. He reversed Nese's move with a super kick, holding onto his arm, then hit the recoil for the win. And then not too much to say. I mean, it was a good match, just your typical 2019 too fast to absorb match. Athletic as hell, but that's just the way it is in 2019. You guys know how I feel about today's style. All right. Then we got Charlotte Flair versus Chelsea Green. Yeah, I've never heard of her either. But she looked good. At first, I thought it was from the Iconics. I thought it was one of the members of the Iconics, and I said, who? Oh, Chelsea Green. I had to take a second look because I thought it was somebody from the Iconics, and I'm like, no, like that's not what I thought it was Peyton Royce. I'm like, no, it can't be. And it's not. It is Chelsea Green. And a good showing for Chelsea Green. Again, she lost, as expected, to Charlotte Flair via the figure eight. Fine with it. She needs to at least have a good showing, and she did. It wasn't a complete squash. It was a competitive, ultimately lose the match type of debut against the top opponent for Chelsea Green. And certainly a great looking woman, right? I mean, nothing bad to say in the physical end whatsoever. But I think more importantly than what this meant for Chelsea Green, because it was just, hey, get your name out there, and what better way to get your name out there than to face one of the top women in WWE. What the hell is Charlotte Flair doing? Where is she? Does anybody know? Charlotte Flair has been kind of muddling around the women's division for quite some time now. Trying to tag with Becky, that didn't work. So she's just floating out there. She's kind of a babyface, but a babyface by default, not because she has a love for the fans, at least her character. It's a weird way that Charlotte's in right now. I don't know what to make of this. So I guess this is WWE's way of giving someone new a little bit of a rub from a top performer like Charlotte, top wrestler like Charlotte. But at the same time, it's also a way to hold steady with Charlotte as they continue to figure out what they're going to do with her, or wait for someone to re-debut or maybe come up from NXT or Nia Jax or somebody to get in a program. It's almost like they're waiting, and they're in a big holding pattern with Charlotte. So, interesting. Okay. Then we're taken back to New York, where Akira Tozawa and R-Truth end up bumping into Santa. Good God. He then sends Truth into his sleigh and then attacks Tozawa with his sack, becoming the new champion. Good. What the hell do I even say about this? I mean, I just don't even know what to say. This is... All right, I'm just moving on before I get on a rant. The OC versus Randy Orton, the Viking Raiders. This was, I thought, a good match. It told the story it needed to tell. It didn't overdo it. It was simple. It moved the story, even if it was a baby step, right? And having AJ Styles beat Randy Orton clean, I get it. It shows that Randy Orton can be beaten. And I'm not a fan of 50-50 booking as this continues, but sometimes it's warranted with two top guys like AJ and Randy Orton, because both are believable to beat the other. So in this case, I'm going to let it slide. And Randy Orton has gotten the best of AJ for a number of weeks now, so it's time for a little bit of payback and a little bit of heat to build. So that's fine. Randy Orton getting the loss here is not going to do a damn thing. It's not going to hurt him in any capacity. So I'm fine with it. Moving on here to, well, moving on to the damn main event, because that's to me where the biggest story came from. And, we have Eric Rowan versus an enhancement talent. Eric Rowan wins as these squash matches continue. Boy, there's a lot of squash matches on Raw. Then we got the conclusion of Santa continues, the chase of Santa continues, and in the end, R-Truth manages to pick up the win, but they keep arguing, and the official says it's too cold for this, and he leaves. Whatever. Moving on, Rusev also had his his address of the Lana's wedding, and says he was screwed over at TLC. He's upset about it, and says you can be damn sure he'll be doing something about it. And he asks the fans if he's upset about Lana and Bobby Lashley getting married. He says no, and that'll be the happiest day of his life because it's Rusev Day. Rusev versus No Way Jose was next. It really ended up in nothing, as No Way Jose gets Machka kicked and Rusev picks up the win. Rusev then picks up No Way Jose and busts out a few moves as he dances around with No Way Jose's conga line and got a few kisses from the ladies. He also pulled out a spin-a-rooney, or Rusev-a-rooney, or whatever kind of weird play on words they want to use. Rusev showing his comedic, fun-loving side. I guess that's the point of this. I don't know what the hell they're doing with No Way Jose. He is the epitome of an Adam Rose knockoff, and that's not a good thing. The Adam Rose Rosebuds was awful. God awful. And No Way Jose's conga line is right up there with them as they get local talent or local whoever to join this just conga line that makes zero sense. It's like having the 24/7 championship, the same number of guys run single file towards R-Truth after he somehow magically escapes to retain the championship. He might be like a 40-time champion at this point. I don't know. But it's that kind of eye-rollingness. It's an Adam Rose throwback. It's just Vince going, oh, there's too much straight-up wrestling. We need some kind of wacky character. We need somebody out here. And he just threw together this conga line nonsense. I hate it. This is just, it's not my brand of wrestling. It didn't do anything for me. But Rusev joining in, I guess, is to show he doesn't care, or he's fun-loving, and he's relatable, and he looks like a good guy. You want to hang out with him. I guess that's the message here. I don't know. I don't know. I'm more of a serious Rusev guy, but that's me. All right. Then, as I promised, Rey Mysterio versus Seth Rollins for the United States Championship. This match was about 10 minutes, maybe a little bit less. Rey Mysterio ends up hitting a 619, but then we had AOP attack him to cause a disqualification, and the beatdown ensues. They drag Rey Mysterio up the ramp, throw him into a bunch of Christmas presents, which are really empty boxes in front of the Christmas tree, and this is where Samoa Joe refuses to move, and this is where everything I just talked about 40 minutes ago happened. He refused to move. AOP beats him down per the instructions of Seth, saying finish him. Great touch there. Loved that. This was really, really good stuff here. Really good stuff. Again, it is a way to gain real heat. It's awesome. It was just a beautiful way to get true heat. Did anybody hear cheers? Anybody? Bueller? I didn't hear cheers. Did you? No. So, again, for a show that I thought would be a maintenance, nearly no progression show, this certainly had its moments, and I'd give this show a thumbs up. I really would. For all the nonsensical storylines of Lana being able to just stop a match, and for No Way Jose's terrible, terrible conga line, and for all of the eye-rolling moments, this certainly, I think, had more upside than down, and I'd give this show a thumbs up. I just would. It was a very good show, and next week certainly is going to prove to be an even more interesting show as the wedding is going to take place, and we all know how weddings go on wrestling storylines. Not well. And one last thing I would like to address. Edge's return. Rumors are flying everywhere that Edge is training his ass off to be able to make a surprise return in the Rumble. I will say this. If Edge debuts at the Rumble, reappears at the Rumble, it's been, what, 10 years since we saw him in a match, almost? 9 years since he had to retire? The crowd would lose their minds. Edge, I think, is one of the more underappreciated top guys of his era. I loved Edge's intensity, his promos, his facials, everything. The Ultimate Opportunist, great nickname, all of it, excellent. And to see Edge back in the ring, if it's going to happen, if he's going to debut at the Rumble, would be massive. But do you have him win the Rumble, or do you have him come in the Rumble and have him be eliminated by whoever he's going to face at WrestleMania? I think that's more of the case. I don't think you put Edge in there to win the Rumble. I really don't. I think that you have him come in to be in the Rumble, make a big splash, hit some spears, make a massive impact, or as WWE likes to say, and a just nauseating level, send a message. You know, as if, you know, I don't know, people are messaging all the time and making statements all the time. That's one of my massive pet peeves of WWE, is making statements and sending messages. I mean, I don't understand their verbiage. Use something else. Use a damn thesaurus and find another word for it. There's got to be another word for messages and statements. Please. Please, I'm begging you. But I think Edge comes in, makes a huge splash, ultimately to be screwed over or eliminated by whoever he's going to face at WrestleMania. That's how I would book him. And I would be extremely, I would mark out. I would mark out like a mark, right? Because we're all marks. Everybody's a damn mark. We're all marks. We all are fans of WWE. And that's, if you weren't, you wouldn't be listening this far in the show. So if it happens, let me ask this to myself. Matt, do you think it's going to happen? I think yes. I think it happens because Edge showed that he is physically cleared to take bumps in the ring. So he did it with Elias a number of months back. So I believe it is possible and likely that he does indeed come back for the match at WrestleMania 36. So I'm looking forward to that, if that's going to be the case. But rumors are flying everywhere right now. So and Edge will deny it, as he should. If you were going to re-debut at the Rumble and you hadn't been in the ring in years, wouldn't you go to extreme lengths to deny it through your teeth? Yeah. Why the hell would you say, well, actually, yeah, I've been training, we'll see what happens? No, you don't. You don't. You deny it. You send out mixed signals, or you send out the opposite signals. So, anyway, guys, thank you so much for joining me on this Christmas Eve edition of the show. It's been a lot of fun being able to share this night with you, and I hope that your Christmas day is enjoyable. And New Year's, I will be back tomorrow night with Wrestling Nostalgia. And it may be a throwback retro show, meaning I may dig up something from the library that I haven't put on the feed in really maybe years. And so the production quality may not be as good as it is now, but rest assured that my passion is always the same, because as obviously as I continue on this show, the production quality increases, as it should. But maybe I'll dig up something from the old library and re-debut it tomorrow night. And I think that'd be good, because I want to make sure you guys get your audio regardless of holiday seasons or not. And so again, then I'll be back on Saturday with a co-host discussing everything that happens in WWE, with SmackDown and Raw, as we roll into the Royal Rumble season, aka the true road to WrestleMania, beginning in 5 weeks or so. So I'm really looking forward to that, as WrestleMania is shaping up to be a hell of an interesting card this year. Does Undertaker come back? You know, is Edge going to be there for one more match? so many different combustible elements is The Fiend versus Roman Reigns that's been rumored for months and months and months actually going to take place. So many things that now you can start to think, you can start to sit back as a wrestling fan, and you can start to look towards WrestleMania. I think it's okay to do that now. I don't think you have to wait till the Royal Rumble for the Royal Rumble winner and winners to actually formulate who you believe could indeed be the main event. Fantasy matches, this is what being a wrestling fan is all about. So I'm looking forward to it. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your holidays. Merry damn Christmas. Take a breath, relax, and I'll talk to you next time.